Cincinnati.
Welcome to episode 253 of Cincinnati, the Bengals UK podcast. My name's Paul Hirons, and you know this, I know this, we all know this. We are mere days and hours away from the 2024 NFL draft, where the Bengals will potentially pick up to 10 new players to join our roster, to join our journey, our march, our inexorable march to the Lombardi Trophy. And it's always a very exciting time of year. And we're going to channel some of that excitement, aren't we, Nathan Palmer?
We are indeed, my son. Yeah, it's upon us. The NFL offseason at the start always keeps on giving, doesn't it? You got the Super Bowl, then you got free agency, and now the draft following up. And I think after what feels like months of analysis and chatter and observations and athleticism scores, the picks are finally going to come in this Thursday night, in the middle of the night.
Indeed, middle of the night indeed, for us Brits over here in the UK, and of course the Irish lads in over the water there in Ireland, and in Europe as well. So late nights ahoy yet again. We've got one round on Thursday night, then I think it's the second and third on Friday night, and then rounds 4 through to 7 on Saturday. Yeah, super exciting. As you say, it's the time for talk is over, Nathan, isn't it, really? We've been going round and round in circles, mock drafts. I hope you've enjoyed our draft coverage this year. Started off with Sam Monson from PFF, just sort of setting the scene for us. And then we also had our British Bengals fan draft panel, our round table. That's always fun. So thanks to Pete, to Paris, to Nathan and Rory for that. And then we had our own mock draft. That was good fun, wasn't it? And then we spoke to a Cincinnati-born NFL prospect, Cecil Singleton. And this week, as per usual, it's his annual appearance on Cincinnati. It is Joe Goodberry. Joe will be coming up very shortly. We've got 35 minutes with Joe Goodberry, not to be missed, as you would imagine. But then you've got me and Nathan to prattle on about the players that we like. We're going to play the name game. We've got some of your correspondences. So it is a packed show tonight, and I think everyone's ready to go for this, Nathan. As you say, it's kind of all the mock drafts, all the talk, going round and round in circles, all the names, the vortex of names of arm lengths and 40 times and goodness knows what else. It kind of does. Where are you? Are you overwhelmed with it? Are you bored with it all now? Are you ready to go? Have you had enough of all this chitter-chatter?
I'm actually more excited about it this year than perhaps even the last couple of years. I quite like the position we're picking in. It sort of opens up quite a few options, doesn't it? You're sort of hoping for someone potentially very talented to fall to you. But the problem is, at this point in the process, you've convinced yourself that everyone's an unbelievable player. And that's the thing that always baffles me, really, every year, is that you look at everyone drafted in round one, and at the time the hype levels are off the chart, the analysis, the videos, the athleticism scores, the combine, the pro days. But it's always crazy that every year or every couple of years, like, you know, looking back on the draft 3-4 years down the line, there's a good 5, 10, 15 of those guys in round one that just never make it. And I always think that's fascinating, isn't it? Because at the time, it's like, you know, this analysis, all this guy's going to be a, you know, a regular starter, a high-end player, this and that. And for whatever reason, they never sort of turn out. So of all these players that, you know, people are saying, oh, the Bengals are guaranteed to get a good player at 18. I mean, yeah, you'd hope so. But as we've seen in the past, it's not always the case. But due to sort of hype levels and over-analysis, you kind of, you get yourself into a bit of a, hyped up sort of cloud of excitement, don't you, really? It's like, oh God, you imagine if we got this guy and this guy, then we'd take over the league. So yeah, it's very exciting, and I'm just glad to get it, you know, get it in the books this Thursday so we can look at the roster and plan from there.
No, I agree. And the thing is about mock drafts, they're great and they're really good fun, actually. And I think they're a really valuable tool for getting to know the players, where they might fall, who they are, what positions they play, who's good, who isn't, all that kind of stuff. That's what the value of mock drafts are. They often and usually bear absolutely no resemblance to reality whatsoever. So yeah, it's almost pointless doing them. It's almost pointless following most people's mock drafts, and I'm talking about so-called experts, you know, because they're just guessing as well. So yeah, I think people sort of put too much on mock drafts, and they fall in love with their people, and it's all very, it feels, even though it's not subjective, because there is data to go on, there is kind of guesswork to go on. But yeah, it's sort of just one person's opinion, really. And the draft never usually shakes out the way that you think it might or other people tell you it might. So what are we doing even talking about it? It's fun. It is fun to speculate. I think that's the whole point with these mock drafts. And the whole draft industry is just speculation, really. Some informed, some not so informed. And certainly when it comes to a lot of fans, like me included, I have to say, a lot of it is subjective, and we fall in love with guys that for no, just because of a feeling, really, you know, or one play that we've seen on a video a clip on YouTube. Do you know what I mean? So mock drafts don't usually have any resemblance on the real thing. They don't account for kind of like, you know, runs on certain position groups. They don't account for kind of mad panic in various war rooms across the US and the NFL. They don't account for trades up and down, you know. So all that kind of stuff is there to be looked forward to. But all we can do is just guess, have fun speculating, and just treat it as it is speculation. But we know we can kind of take educated guesses about, you know, who they might choose, certainly what position groups they might choose. So yeah, it's all good fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think you make a good point with some of the mock drafts and things like that. And every year, I always think this is fascinating as well about the draft, is you'll look at consensus mock drafts around the league. Like every single person will have someone like JC Latham going in the top 20. You know, there'll be no mock drafts that are going to put him outside of that. And, you know, on the other side of things, someone like Nate Wiggins, his position might be between 20 and 30 in every mock draft, pretty much out there. And yet on the day, even though 100 mock draft analysts, PFF mock drafts, expert mock drafts, you know, Pete Prisco, whoever it is doing these mock drafts, on the day, Nate Wiggins might go number 12 because someone's fallen in love with him, you know, at the whoever's picking number 12 team. And then someone like JC Latham, for all we know, there's some medical report about him that hasn't been leaked to the press and that people are worried about, and he might fall to round 2 or 3. And that's happened in the past quite a lot, and I always think that's fascinating, because you always think in your mind, you're like, oh God, that there's no way that can happen, and surely not, this player's going to go here. But yeah, you do see it on draft day, some really interesting sort of people going far earlier than expected or far later. So that's always the thing I think is quite exciting on the day.
Indeed. Just to mention that our own Andrew Dockrell has his latest mock draft on our blog site, bengalsuk.wordpress.com, I believe that is. So go and check that out. We've got one more mock draft from Andrew to come this week. It's the AI draft, which is always really interesting. Andrew surveys basically 100 mocks and sees what they come up with. So that is a true consensus, true taking the average kind of mock draft. So that's really interesting. Right, Nathan, as I say, we've got to crack on. We've got a lot to get through. And not least, welcoming our special guest this week. So let's go straight over to Joe, and then we'll reconvene after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great to me.
And now, as promised, we're going to bring back an old friend of the show. It's our 10th anniversary, as most people know. Our 10-year, we're doing this for 10 years. And this gentleman has been with us pretty much for all of it, and he's good enough to come on every year. He's evolved and developed into one of the most popular, if not the most popular, kind of Bengals pundit, I would say. He's now, he's nodding there modestly there on the screen. It is, of course, Joe Gabry, of course, the host of Bengals on the Brain with First Dial Logistics. Joe, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here on the eve of what I know is your favorite time of the year.
That's right. It's draft season, and it feels like it has been. We've been doing this. I don't know if I've been coming on all 10 years with you guys, but it feels like it. It feels like a long time. And yeah, at the same time, like it was just yesterday. As I do historical stuff with the draft, and I'm looking back right now, and that's the process with a week left. I'm comparing some of these prospects, the prospects the Bengals have drafted. And I go, I can't believe this was 11 years ago. I can't believe that was 12 years ago. It's crazy. But yeah, it's that time. It's fun.
And look at us both now, where we've come. Pretty amazing, isn't it, really? But as I say, you know, time waits for no man, woman, child, dog, and everyone else in between. We march on to the next draft, the 2024 NFL draft. We're recording this on the Thursday, so literally a week away, 1 week away. Joe, I know that everyone wants to talk to you and wants a piece of you and wants your opinion on things. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this with us. It's really great, and it's much appreciated. But let's stop blowing smoke up each other's backsides and let's talk draft. Okay. It's an interesting position that the Bengals are in, I think. We've sort of been in this position, talking about historic drafts, we've been in this sort of almost no man's, no person's land before. But it feels like it's quite exciting to be here. I don't know. I'm because they could go in lots of different ways. Am I reading this situation wrong? I read a lot of people saying, oh, we've got to trade up to get some elite players. Or no, we should trade down to kind of get more picks, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know, 18, it seems like a pretty good spot once you see what the big boards are and what we need and what the best player available might be. Would you agree?
I would agree. And I think it starts with the state of the team. You know, generally we're in a good spot. The Bengals are in a good spot. They're in a Super Bowl window still. You know, they're trying to get through it. They've done as best of a patchwork job in free agency as you can to fill their holes. Now they still have some, but as they enter the draft with a few needs that they want to address, and we'll probably get there. But the first round is especially strong this year. And typically you'll hear there's 18 to 24 first round graded guys in any particular draft, you know, that you really feel are good first round guys. And the Bengals last 2 years have been picking on the back half of that at 28 and 31, right? And it's a much different process when you get there. You kind of get to that spot and it's, well, we got one first round graded guy left and Dax Hill and Miles Murphy, I guess that's who we'll take. So you really don't have any control over what you're getting at the end of that draft. You're just hoping that turns into a good player. It's much different this year because I think there's about 28 to 32 first round graded guys, which would have been great if we're still at the end of the first round. But at 18, that means you're not picking one of the last first round guys. It means you're going to have probably any simulation I do, any mock draft I do, I'm sitting there and there's 5, 6, 7, 8 guys that I would take at 18. So unless a disaster scenario presents itself where none of the quarterbacks go or all of the offensive tackles are gone, I think the Bengals are going to have their choice of whatever they want, whether that be a defensive tackle, offensive tackle, or maybe a surprise at corner and maybe Brock Bowers at tight end.
Well, there's a lot to unpick there, isn't there? But it feels like there's right that, as we know, the mock drafts are great just for fun, and also it's great. They're great tools to actually get to know the players as well, I think, a little bit. You get to delve into who these names are and where they might appear. Now, it fluctuates, the mock drafts I do. At the moment, someone like Talisi Fuaga is there all the time, whereas a week or two ago, he was long gone by then. Now, I'm just using Fuaga as an example here. He happens to be my favorite, you know, my favorite offensive lineman, yeah, of the whole class, pretty much. But it just fluctuates. So What are you expecting in terms of everyone's talking about? Let's start with the offensive line then. Everyone's talking about this kind of almost historic class of certainly first round graded offensive linemen and tackles at that as well. Although Fautino is kind of reckoned that he'll push inside and has that versatility, but you know what I mean? It is a historic class in that sense. What would be the ideal scenario for the Bengals? Would it be the fact that they would have that choice of those guys right there at 18?
Yeah, the ideal scenario would be that maybe one of the top guys falls to them on the offensive line. And from the top, it's Joe Alt at Notre Dame. We expect him to be gone in the first seven picks, right? And he doesn't get out in probably any draft class, he doesn't get out of the top 5 to 10. And then from there, I think why you see different guys available for you in these mocks is because we almost have musical chairs. Maybe there's three chairs and there's four or five, maybe even sometimes six guys. And so they've all taken their turn of who is going to go before the Bengals are on the clock. And as teams filled needs in free agency and signed players and created new holes, it's kind of changed as we've gone throughout the process. It was Olu Fashanu out of Penn State as the consensus number two. Now he's number 14 on the consensus ranking. So there's a chance that's within striking distance of the Bengals at 18. And he's probably the second best pass protector in this entire class behind Joe Alt. So, like, that would be best case scenario. Somehow he's still there for you. I do think some teams really have high grades on Talifuanga out of Oregon State, and the Bengals potentially could as well. If he's still there, I think that's a slam dunk pick as well. The other wild cards, though, from this class are J.C. Latham from Alabama, who did not test, kind of had a quiet draft process. But when you cut on the tape, when you talk to guys that are evaluators or O-line people, they all love J.C. Latham. So would I be surprised if he went top 12? Would not be shocked at all because teams may just say, you know, we don't care about the testing there. We can see on tape, he's a 20-year-old on tape. He's strong, he's physical, he's got everything we want out of a big school, and they'll just take him. But if not, and he's still there at 18, I think the Bengals would really be in on him and Amarius Mims, big guys from the SEC, from big programs, from the biggest schools where they've drafted offensive linemen before. And then Amarius Mims, though, his issue is he's only played 803 collegiate snaps. He's only got about six full games where he's finished, started and finished. It makes it a big risk to know what he's going to be. But again, the upside with him is tremendous. He could
I
come
was
out and
going to
be the best
say,
tackle.
when you put on the tape for Mims, what do you see? Is he worth the risk? Because
You see an athletic, big, super strong and physical, long offensive lineman, but he is definitely lacking in experience in a lot of ways. His timing, he relies on his physical size and his hands to just clamp guys down and hold them down. But he's never really been challenged. Like, even when you watch it, they're not running an NFL offense. They're running a lot of play action, a lot of screens. There's a metric, true pass sets from Pro Football Focus. It says that Georgia put Amarius Mims in true pass sets 25% of his snaps. So you only really get those are the ones you want to evaluate. Like, how good is this guy? Here he is. He's on an island. He's going to have to block for 3 to 4 seconds. The Bengals do it with their offensive lineman about 45% of the time. So it would be a big jump for him to be exposed that often for an entire season. He's never even played a full season worth of NFL snaps, which is 1,000 to plus if we make a playoff run. So he's never done it. So it is a risk. Even while watching tape, you're like, yeah, I can see the physical traits. I can see the size. I can see the strength. But man, there's just not enough here for me to be sure of where he's going to land on his wide spectrum.
Yeah, it's never stopped the Bengals drafting someone that hasn't tested before, right?
Right.
So, you know, we
Correct.
should always bear that in mind. It's fascinating because Mims is going to suddenly come up against Myles Garrett and TJ Watt twice a year, you know. So it would be. But then again, I keep thinking this, but then and then it's like, well, actually, we've just signed Trent Brown and we've got two Brown bookends. So he wouldn't have to start straight away, right? It would be an opportunity for someone like Mims or Latham or whoever to learn and get acclimatized and work on his technique and his strength and his savvy and all the rest of it, you know. So I guess that's worth bearing in mind, isn't it, when it comes to offensive linemen as well?
They have a great situation right now. They can draft any offensive lineman, even if it's a guy with guard versatility, whether it's Troy Fautino or Talifuanga. A lot of teams think he's a guard as well. But they could say you have Gardner still the go ahead and compete with Cordell Volson on the left side spot. If Trent Brown goes down, we'll kick you guys back out the tackle and you'll play there. We'll let you develop. Historically, if you're using things like PFF grades, I've looked at this before, rookies don't perform very well, even on the offensive line. There's a few guys that will, but historically you're looking at like a 62 grade, giving up about 8 sacks per year. It's just not great. So you don't want to have to play those guys unless they're ready, unless they're truly good. So you bring them in and you have your starters and you say, okay, if you win a job, if you're one of those few that are good right out of the gate, we'll find a way to get you on the field. Otherwise, take your time, develop, and let's, you know, have you ready for when inevitably that guy goes down in the playoffs or right before the playoffs, which has sunk their seasons twice now in the last 3 years.
Before we move on to a different position, give us your favorite. Who's your favorite? You think Joe Alt and perhaps Fashion is going to go, right? But out the rest, those first round graded guys, who's your particular favorite?
So on tape, my favorite is J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Right. I think his balance, his technique, his strong hands, maybe his strongest hands that I've ever seen coming out. He looked like, if you want to get Willie Anderson, that's what they look like coming out. And I wouldn't be – Willie didn't test well either. But you could see functionally he was athletic. And that's what I would say about J.C. Latham. And the power and the strength is just there. And he's 20, and it's great. But otherwise, if we're taking some of the guys that have – a more complete profile. Give me Talifuonga out of Oregon State. And I think he could be a guard as well, but I'm going to play him at tackle. He had a lot of true pass sets at Oregon State. You get a lot of quality film to see what you're going to get. And he's a B-level pass blocker, but he's an A-plus run blocker. And I think this team could use that. And you can survive off a B-level blocker in this offense that gets the ball out quickly. And that's not, you know, I don't want to discredit him. That B is first-round grade still. It's just that he is a tremendous run blocker, the best at getting to the second level, the best to pulling in space. You could do a lot with Talifuonga.
And just, again, before we move on, what do you think the likelihood is the Bengals will pick up an interior offensive lineman somewhere throughout, maybe from rounds 3 to 5 or something like that?
Yeah, while the offensive tackle class gets all of the pub, the interior offensive line class is very strong. Rounds 2 through probably 5, I'm thinking, at least through 4. You're looking at 6, maybe centers that'll probably end up being starting centers. You're looking at 8, probably interior guards that will probably be starters down the line, which is a lot. That is more than normal. I would say normally it's about 4 and 5 or 4 and 6. So we're almost doubling that in a lot of ways, especially at center. So you have your opportunity. You may be forced to take one or faced with the opportunity to take one. And I think with the Bengals having an extra pick, especially in the 3rd round and then coming back in the 4th, potentially, I could see it happening. So there's a lot of guys there. I would hope they would.
In our mock draft that we did on the last episode, Nathan and I chose Cedric Van Pran Granger in the 3rd round, which is higher than we thought, but he was like one of the highest graded players in that round. And, you know, last year for Ted and next year, I think, is the last year for Kappa. So, you know, it's perhaps worth building on. Right. Let's get to the other side of the ball, because you mentioned that there's still a few holes left on this team. And one of them is defensive tackle, or at least a true nose tackle. Right. So we're all still very upset, Joe, about, when I say we, me, very upset about DJ Reader's exit. But, you know, the fact is he's gone and we have to move on and we've got to find a solution, because the run defense, even with DJ last year, was pretty awful, it has to be said. Yep. Rankins is there now. Good signing, I think. BJ Hill, very, very solid guy. Tupu's still not signed. So we do have a glaring hole there at nose tackle. Two guys in that first round grades, Byron Murphy and Johnny Newton, whatever the artist formerly known as Jazane, I think. Two very different sort of players, I guess, but I mean, it seems like everyone loves those guys and everyone loves a big nose tackle because of the impact that he can make. What's your feelings on that position and those two guys?
Yeah, so they definitely need a nose tackle. There isn't one on the roster, as you touched on, even Josh Dupeau, which you would think would be at least a reserve nose tackle. And for those that maybe aren't as familiar, defensive tackle, and then we pare it down to nose tackle. Those guys are typically the 315 plus, all the way up to 340, 350. Javondre Sweat, 366 in this class, right? Those are the guys that take on two blockers, eat up space, and allow the other guys around them to work. So you typically want guys that are good against the run. You want them to be thicker and heavier to hold up. Johnny Newton and Byron Murphy are each of the 300-pound Geno Atkins ilk with the shorter arms and the quickness that you look for. They're more of the penetrating three techs. Now, the hard part about it and the tricky part is Byron Murphy played nose tackle at Texas. So you know you're going to have to move him and change him, but he could probably do some of it for you in a pinch as you need right now because you don't have anybody else. And that sounds great to have Rankins, Byron Murphy, and BJ Hill all out there together. It sounds like a good unit. You can have a lot of fun with that, even though you're definitely throwing away some size and strength and power by, you know, kicking out DJ Reader and letting him walk. Jerzon Newton will never play nose tackle in any way. Didn't really have the experience. Doesn't take on double teams the same way. He's a good run defender, but from the outside, from the, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 tech going out towards the defensive ends, that's what he does. He didn't test before the combine or before the draft. He has absolutely no buzz. Probably the coldest pre-draft stock market of any player. And it's
weird. Yet at the start of the process, Joe, you included, I think, to be fair, everyone was going nuts about Jerzon Newton. He was the new Aaron Donald. He still might be, obviously. But do you know what I mean? He compares athletically to Aaron Donald and production-wise, at college at least, anyway. So why has he dropped? And is it because of the size issue? Because he didn't test? Is that purely why?
I think the non-testing, and that stems from having a foot injury that he played through too. You, like, if you watch the Penn State game, I believe it happens in that game, and you watch it, you're like, he's dominant. It didn't affect him. And he broke a bone in his foot. So this is something that required surgery, wasn't able to work out, wasn't able to showcase himself. He does have a slighter frame than Byron Murphy. Shorter arm, shorter wingspan. And just when you look at him, he looks more maxed out. He looks like you're not going to add much more weight to him and much more power to him. And I think teams care about that stuff. When they look at Byron Murphy, they see a slightly younger player, but a less experienced player that has the frame to look like he could probably get to 310, 315 and maybe carry that weight a little bit differently and do different things for you. In the production profiles, pass rush win rate, things like that, while Johnny Newton's in the 90th percentile, Byron Murphy's in the 98th percentile. When he actually plays three tech and plays the position he's supposed to play, his numbers are amazingly good. All of his production came from there. And I think teams see that and they go, that's the guy we want. We don't really, you know, Johnny Newton, if he's there, fine. If not, whatever. Let's go get Byron Murphy.
Mm. So if we, for instance, draft, if he, Byron Murphy falls into our lap, which may happen, Newton's still there, probably will happen, by the way. He seems to be falling, as you mentioned. Where are we going to get our big slice of beef from, Joe? Where are we going to get our nose tackle from? Is it going to be a Chris Jenkins in round 2 or 3? Is it going to be, you know, do we take a risk on Tavondre Sweat? Do we wait until, like, you know, I know they've met with sort of people like Justin Rogers and Evan Anderson way down, you know, the late round. So where is this nose tackle coming from, I guess?
They have done a lot of work and have had a lot of contact with nose tackles or guys that could probably transition to be a nose tackle, which is part of the deal. Not a lot of teams actually use one in college to the same effect that you would in the NFL. So even when you're watching them, it's a very, very unknown draft pick in terms of you don't get great production numbers. They're not going to test very well athletically. And when you watch them on film, a lot of them aren't doing what you're going to do in the NFL, number one. And number two, they're just eating space. So how do I know? We've spent a pick on this recently in Tyler Shelvin, right? He completely had none of the boxes checked other than size and a big program. And we see how that worked out. Looking at history of drafting nose tackles, you can't predict where they come from. It's a very inexact science. You just want to take a guy that's willing, powerful, has the body, and maybe has done it some in college, and you develop him in a 2-3 year window. So I don't know that there's an answer this year in this draft class. Maybe it is Tavondre Sweat, but again, like I said, Murphy played the nose. Sweat did not, because Sweat didn't control the line of scrimmage the way you would expect for a big guy, didn't run things down. He's kind of lazy, kind of jogs plays out a lot of times if it goes away from him, and they wanted to not be able to run away from Byron Murphy, so they put him in the middle there of their defense and said, he's going to be our guy that you – can't game plan around. So I think Sweat with the DUI is potentially off the Bengals board. They really haven't taken too many character risk guys since Zach Taylor's been there. It's really been Jackson Carmen. I don't even know how much they knew about that stuff before they drafted him, right? And that seemed like that pick came from the heavens above and it just was forced upon them a little bit, right? But so I don't know if they will take Sweat, but maybe the value will meet itself. Maybe he's so far and away the best nose tackle prospect that if he's there in the fourth round, how do you deny it? And you just hope for the best. I could see that happening. Otherwise, this is my warning. I think they could take the wrong guy way too early at D tackle. Like I'm thinking Mason Smith out of LSU in round two. And I would be like, no, don't do it. That's not worth it. I know you need a nose, but don't force it when they're such a gamble. They are such a lottery ticket pick that you should probably only spend day three picks on these guys.
You've got Ohoraho as well. And, Michael Hall as well has been, I think.
Yeah, and these are guys, those guys aren't nose tackles. Right, no, Hall, Aurora, even Chris Jenkins, he's good against the run, but not the size and doesn't really play like a nose. And Braden Fisk as well. These are the defensive pass rushing types from the inside. Not much nose tackle options, even in the first two, three rounds.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. Right, I want to talk about another, you could argue the other glaring hole on this team, I think, is starting cornerback. Now Cheeto's gone, Cheeto, and do we trust DJ Turner? Perhaps not, but depends on what his jump is like in the second year. I think he's got all the tools, but we'll see. There's been a bit of chat about what if a Terry Arnold or a Nate Wiggins or whoever is there at 18. The Bengals do not shy away from drafting cornerbacks in the first round. Right. Now, they've gone second round recently, but what if one of those guys? It would make sense, but it would perhaps piss a lot of people. Not that Duke Tobin cares about this particularly. It would piss a lot of people off because they're so invested in offensive line, trenches, defensive tackle. What's your take on a cornerback at 18? And if not at 18, relatively high?
So I do think it's a need, and largely because DJ Turner hit a rookie wall last year. Otherwise, I thought he was good to start the year, right? You could see these guys sometimes they get to, you know, those 800 snaps or so that you play in college, and then that's it. They struggle after that. They've lost weight. They can't keep up. Their head's swimming a little bit as it gets late in the season. And those things happen. I do think they still are high on him and would like to see his development in year two, but hope is not a plan. And the fourth corner has played so much for this team in the Super Bowl window, whether that's Eli Apple, whether that's DJ Turner last year. He was supposed to be the fourth corner as Cheeto and Cam Taylor-Britt were the starters and Mike Hilton was the slot guy, right? So the fourth guy, three out of the last 4 years, has led this cornerback room in snaps. And that, you can even count Cam Taylor-Britt his rookie year as well. We didn't expect him to walk in and start, and he did. Well, after he got back from injury. But point being is you should expect that fourth guy to play a ton, and they currently really don't have one on the roster, right? It can't be DJ Ivy. He had that late season injury, and he was a seventh-round pick. So, like, you're really playing with fire if he's the next guy off the bench. Having said that, we do our grades and our spreadsheet every year, and we try to see who looks like the best players in the draft. And I think the most underrated and untalked about position in this entire draft, where you'll hear analysts say the receiver class is excellent, the offensive tackle class is excellent, the cornerback class and the top five guys have elite grades for us this year, whether that's the top two, Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, different players. Terrion Arnold's more of the tackler, physical. He used to play safety. They put him at corner. He's only a 4-5 guy, but everything else is great. Intelligence, IQ, leadership, tackling, physicality, zone coverage, intelligence. And then Quinyon Mitchell is the ball skills, the athleticism, the length. He looks like Sauce Gardner. Those guys should be top 12 picks in every draft class, but this is such a strong one at the top with the receivers, the quarterbacks, and the tackles could be all of the top 10 picks, and the corners are going to fall a little bit. After that, whether it's Cooper DeJean out of Iowa, who scores in the 90th percentile for athleticism and coverage grades out of PFF, which typically points to the best corners in the league, have both of those things. He has it. Then you get Nate Wiggins, who only doesn't really have size, but everything else is really good. He's fast. He's athletic. He's got great production numbers from Clemson, who the Bengals have never shied away from either. Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama. He's the other guy from Terrion Arnold, who was a top recruit. And honestly, I think we got tired of talking about him because he was good his freshman year. And if you look at PFF grades, it goes from like a 72 to a 77 to an 89 grade this past year. And people aren't talking about the development. Like they expected more out of him. He's been good every single year and he's gotten better. And then there's the last guy being, oh, I said Cooper DeJean. Those are the five right there that should go in the fifth round or go in the first round. These are, in my opinion, really strong prospects. And in a nightmare scenario where they can't get Byron Murphy or they can't get one of their top offensive tackles, they could be sitting there with one of these guys. Maybe that's Quinion Mitchell. Maybe it's Terrion Arnold. Maybe it's Kool-Aid McKinstry, whoever it may be. And they're sitting there and saying, yeah, these guys are good, and we're going to take one of them because we can't deny taking a premium position of a young player with a premium pick.
I think there's some interesting prospects in this, you know, looking at Lassiter, James, Tampa, Max Melton. Everybody seems to love Sainris still.
Yeah. We might have to cross off the slot corners, though, if Dax Hill's moving the corner. You know,
well,
the only
there
thing.
Is that, yeah. I like Andrew Phillips as well, but, you know, we'll see about him. You know, there are options basically all the way down. Now, right, let's get to weapons. Let's talk rapine ball, okay, here. Wide receiver, on cornerback, I do think that is a wild card selection that people should be prepared for. You know, you said that, as you said, there's some really good prospects there, and we could do with one. And the Bengals traditionally do not shy away from drafting corners very high. Wide receiver, obviously, T's here for another year, all being well. Who knows what's going to happen, but he's likely to be here. A lot of people say, look, you've got to take the consensus seems to be you've got to take advantage of this deep wide receiver class as early as you can. If that's not the first round with a Brian Thomas or whoever that might be, it's got to be second or third. Again, do you subscribe to that approach? And who do you like?
So I love the top three receivers in this class, just like everybody else does. I think they're going to be stud number one type guys. After that, if you're a team that needs a number one, the profiles do not scream number one type wide receivers. And the Bengals don't need that. So that's good for us. Yay for us. Bad for teams like the Bills who trade away Stephon Diggs and now need a receiver. And they're like, oh, these look like a bunch of number twos and number threes, which is great for the Bengals, right? But what that usually says through history, when you draft for lower upside players, is you tend to play in a riskier bucket. You tend to play in the sandbox that has some cat poop in it. And what happens is you end up with bad players more often than not. And it's a scarier wide receiver class than I think we've let on, because the Bengals typically like bigger guys in the slot, and all these slot guys are small. And the Bengals usually like young production. They've always drafted guys that have produced at 18, 19, 20 years old. And because of the COVID years and the NIL, and it seems like talent at wide receiver keeps going to the same schools, because of these things, these guys are producing at 20, 21, 22 years old, coming into the draft at 23. Xavier Leggett, who's really fun and has a great story for why he is developing so late. But that would be very weird if the Bengals drafted him. They've never drafted a prospect like that that's going to be 24 and hasn't had any production in the first three rounds.
Ricky Pearsall as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Licky Pearsall, Ladd McConkey. There's a lot of these guys in this class where it's like, yeah, I don't know if that's their type. Jalen Polk, Roman Wilson. There's a bunch with low breakout ages that were older when they finally produced. I don't know if the Bengals will like that. And they've done it a couple times. Andre Caldwell was one. Recently, Charlie Jones and Andre Josivas last year, because you're kind of forced to play in the sandbox. And then this year, I just saw the Bills GM was doing a interview, and he said we had 170 graded players that were draftable graded players go back to school this year, go back to college. That really kills the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. So I don't know if, you know, these guys are going to get pushed up further, and that's just the nature of this year's draft, but it feels like they are a little bit.
That's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, if we had more time, we could discuss why that might be. So do give us a couple of notes. It seems to me the Bengals could do with a new slot receiver. Mm-hmm. Is that player already on the roster? Who knows? We will need someone for the outside to take over from T, right? So do you double dip at this position? I mean, there are players here that, you know, live in the slot or, you know, best suited for the outside. So what's your feeling on a couple of names here?
Yeah, so say I think they want to address slot. I don't think they're overly happy with Charlie Jones last year, and he got hurt and twice. And so I think that kind of ruins your perception of a player. But he was slight and he was older to begin with. So these were things that, they probably hoped he would hit the ground running as a rookie. And when they got their hands on him, they weren't sure he was that type of guy, from what I understand. So I don't know if they pencil him in as the slot. I think Mike Gesicki will play a lot of those snaps. Looking at this class, if they get to round two, I think guys that really fit their profile are Keon Coleman out of Florida State, who would be a big slot for them. They'd move him inside, and he'd be a Tyler Boyd. T.J. Hushman's out of Mohamed Sanu. That's what they typically like, how those guys look, where they're 6'2" and plus, and they can make them block, and they can give them over the middle and be good contested catches situation guys. I think Brendan Rice fits them in a lot of ways. I think Jalen Polk may fit in terms of if he's there in the third round, but I just saw a report today that he'd go top 40 out of Washington. I
Wow,
don't like
yeah, I
him at
like
that range. And then there's two others that I think, and if we can get him in the third round or so, one being McMillan out of Washington. There's three receivers there. You have Roma Dunze, you have Jalen Polk, and then you have Jalen McMillan. McMillan was their slot guy. He had the young production. He was the number two before Polk really stepped up this year and became their deep threat. You could do wildcat things with him. You could do a lot of fun things. He looks to me like I called him a slot version of Marvin Jones. And I love Marvin Jones when he was coming out that year. I see a lot of similarities in that. I could see the Bengals liking him as well. He's projected to go in that third round range, if that's 80 or 97, also represented by our guy, John Thornton.
Big John, good old John. Yes, friend of the program, friend to everyone, I
Yeah.
think. And McMillan has also visited with the Bengals as well,
Yes.
for whatever that's worth. Right. It's tradition, Joe. Whenever you come on, you give us a couple of late round sleepers. Again, you mentioned Marvin Jones, you hit with William Jackson, you've hit with a bunch of others. So give us one or two names
I'm gonna
for us to
go
look out for.
running back George Helani out of Hawaii, or I'm sorry, out of Boise State. The Bengals typically they had a meeting with him at the combine, and another coach went to his pro day. But I think running back is a sneaky need. I think they could be sitting there in day three and saying, hey, I'm not sure Trevion Williams and Chris Evans are much more than just rosterable camp guys, preseason guys. We may need to upgrade the running back three position. I think George Helani makes a lot of sense for what they typically draft at that position. I think at tight end, we could see Eric All out of Iowa in the fourth round. Maybe that's fifth round. The tight end class is weird. I like it at the top, and I don't know that the rankings and consensus rankings are correct. I like Ben Sinnott and Jaheim Bell. I think Jaheim Bell would be a great player to have for the Bengals, and he's projected going like the fifth round. So if that's the case, let's do it. You'll get virtual high fives from across the pond from me. Otherwise, I do think AJ Barner from Michigan, who is a blocker, they need another blocker in that tight end room, makes a lot of sense for them. Two guys though that they met with on offensive tackle that I think are fun are Bayron Matos and Giovanni Manu, two guys who did not play football really much at all, basketball players and defensive linemen and just kind of practice squad guys in college, but are 6'8" freaks, athletic, and these guys come out sometimes, and that's the number one trait you need for offensive linemen at tackle. Are they long and are they athletic? And these guys nail both of them. One's from Canada, one was on the bottom end of the roster
International
in South Florida.
pathway,
Yeah. Yeah,
And
exactly. So
they've
that'd
got
be
the raw
fun.
materials, definitely.
Yeah. They met with both, which is interesting.
Okay, well, Joe, we can't thank you enough. Again, I know that everyone wants to talk to you at this time of year, and I really appreciate you just carving out a bit of time for us as ever. It's great to catch up with you, and thank you for all your help and work. Just generally, but also and your support over the past 10 years. It's crazy, but it's much appreciated, and it's great to call you a friend, and everyone in the UK regards you as such as well. One question. Brock Bowers,
Okay.
we haven't even discussed Brock Bowers, but are you saying, is it quickly a yay or a nay from you? I know it's a far more nuanced discussion than that,
Yeah.
but if he's around, a yay or a nay, are you going to discount offensive linemen? Are you going to discount Byron Murphy, are you just gonna go? Are you just gonna go back and say, yeah, you're a name?
I would take Bowers. I think he's got a perfect profile for the tight end, and he could be the number two option for this team in a year when you need, because T. Higgins may be gone. So I don't know if they will, though. I think he will probably be a top 12 or so player on their board, but there's a chance that you may have a guy higher, whether it's a Quinyon Mitchell or one of these top offensive linemen. So they could bypass Bowers.
There you go. Joe, thanks so much, man, and enjoy the draft, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Paul. It's good talking to you again.
Cincinnati. Might I implore you, with sweetest tone, to grace our podcast before you roam with a subscription to our lyrical home, and like each episode in your browser's dome. You care. Ring the bell of notifications clear, so our voices you'll always hear. Embrace our stories far and near. With every like, you bring us cheer.
Share with friends. Joy, don't hide, unveil the love you have inside.
There we go. Huge thanks to Joe Goodbury, as I mentioned in that interview. Everybody wants a piece of Joe Goodbury, the Goodbury pie, and everyone wants a piece of that. So honestly, we can't thank Joe enough for spending a little bit of time with us, quite a lot of time with us really, and it's always good because he likes to give us some time, which I do appreciate. And that is because we've known him for a long time, and I remember talking to him first when he was part of Cincy Jungle, if you can believe it, almost 10 years ago. We had a good conversation on their podcast, and we've stayed in touch ever since. And Joe's been good enough to pop onto our podcast and our blogs and all sorts of things over the years. So thank you. And as ever, really good stuff from Joe. Really interesting. I guess, Nathan, where do you start with that, really? I mean, as it was expected, he's really paying attention to both offensive tackle and defensive tackle. It kind of goes along with what we've been saying, really, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, I'm sure Joe's stolen a lot of the stuff he said on the podcast from you anyway, and it's just regurgitated it into his own words.
That's but, all right. Well, that's okay. Well, I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
Now, do you know what? Quickly, just on Joe, I mean, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to him and the brand that he's built over the last couple of years. The amount of time and effort he puts into analysing games and looking at stats, watching tape, you know, the rest of it. And, you know, it's a really impressive thing that he's been able to build over there. So you've got to say fair play to him. And you can tell how passionate he is and knowledgeable he is by the 30-odd minutes that he's just given us. And, yeah, he raises some fantastic points. I mean, it is that DT, OT kind of debate, isn't it? I think we'd all be very surprised if the Bengals went outside of that and drafted a cornerback, a tight end, maybe a wide receiver. I think it'd be very unlikely considering the talent that'll likely be available there. But anything that stood out to you, my son?
Yeah, the fact that he was the thing is, right, with this, let's talk about offensive tackle first, right? So I think it's the consensus out there is that the Bengals are going to take an offensive tackle if that, you know, he's around that position. It's a historical class at the top end of that position. There are six or seven guys that will have first round grades, as Joe said. This whole first round is very deep in terms of first round grades. Now, again, the consensus suggests that Joe Alt and Ole Fashanu will be gone. They're the best two tackles in the class, so I've not been concentrating them. My personal favourite, as I've mentioned before, is Fuaga, Talisi Fuaga. But Joe is highest on J.C. Latham, which is really interesting, and he wouldn't be upset if Amarius Mims came into that equation as well. Fautanu has got the versatility there, so he'll be there or thereabouts as well. But then you've got the two defensive tackles, Byron Murphy, who you like, don't you? You really like Byron Murphy, and Jazane Johnny Newton. And the interesting thing there is we talk about, you know, the loss of DJ Reader, but he's a very specific kind of player. He's a run-stuffing nose tackle who can cause a bit of carnage. You know, he does get good push, DJ Reed, and yes, we're still talking about him. I will shut up about DJ, I promise, at some point. But DJ is a very specific kind of guy, right? He's a nose tackle. And, you know, Byron Murphy and Jazay Newton are certainly Newton, but more so Byron Murphy. They're sort of three tech guys, yeah? So he did make a really interesting point. The Bengals might not solve their nose tackle situation in this draft. Which is a bit scary, really, when you think about it. They might pick up a really good disruptive defensive tackle, but he might not be the nose tackle that we're looking for. These aren't the droids you're looking for. These aren't the nose tackles that you're looking for. That's my really bad Alec Guinness Obi-Wan Kenobi impression. Anyway, right. Yes, so that was interesting. And I do think his analysis of the cornerback situation is really interesting. As I say, my favourite probably is Quinion Mitchell, but we'll see. But Joe wouldn't be surprised if they do go. If there's a run on tackles and your top two defensive tackles are out and you've got a high grade on a Terrin Arnold or a Quinion Mitchell, or even your boy, you know, Cooper DeJean, although I think it's probably a bit high for him there at 18. But see what I mean? I'm talking as if, you know, it's got a bit, we've got to talk more about position groups. And I do think it's going to be offensive tackle, defensive tackle, or coming up on the outside as a bit of a wild card, cornerback. And the absolute wild card, I think, would be a wide receiver.
Do you know, on that subject, and I literally, it ties in perfectly what I was saying before about sort of, you know, just around the corner from the actual draft time, you get some slightly mad things happening. I mean, Chris Sims has just released his latest mock draft, and Joe Goodby's been sort of talking about it. And this is where you get some slightly mad ones. He's got Joe Alt going at 5. He's got J.C. Latham going at 7, which is much higher than anywhere else. He's got Drake May at 11, Troy Faltanu at 10. Bo Nix 12, Michael Penix, the other quarterback, at 13, Byron Murphy 14. Ooh. Most interestingly, he's got us taking Rome Odunze, which I don't think I've seen anyone in any mock draft. I don't think I've ever seen him even fall that far in either PFF.
That's above Fuaga and Fashanu.
Yeah. He's got Fashion going 20, then Graham Barton going 21. So, I mean, there's some really odd kind of picks in there. And like, I don't think I've seen anyone, like I said, have Odunze in there at 18. Now, I'm not saying that's in any way particularly realistic. I think Chris Sims at times, you know, I think there's a degree of some of these mock drafts trying to get a bit of self-promotion yourself out of being a bit controversial. But it does show you that, you know, someone like Rome Odunze, no one has seen or even really thought too much about him being a realistic pick. But if he dropped down, you know, very, very talented, athletic wide receiver, you know, great long-term replacement for T, all of a sudden the whole draft board goes a bit upside down.
It does, doesn't it? What would you think if they took an Odunze there? Because just had a look, actually. Sims's board there, Sims's mock draft, is purely about best player available. Because Rome Odunze is reckoned to be a top 8 sort of player, something like that.
He's got a ton of quarterbacks, isn't he? That's the thing.
Yeah, he's got a ton of quarterbacks. J.C. Latham's gone really high. So the consensus is that Fashanu is the number 2 tackle, but he's got J.C. Latham as the number 2 tackle. And that mirrors what Joe was saying about J.C. Latham. And I understand from listening to various podcasts that our old friend Dave Lapham, that's one of his favourites as well. So suddenly Latham's getting a bit of hype, a bit of chatter. And, you know, that's fine. Byron Murphy at 14, Bowers at 15 there. That's about the area that I would. But yeah, what would you think if they took a wide receiver? What would you think if they took a Rome Odunze? I wouldn't be. Because I would understand that that is the best player available right there. Now, you can argue that Fuaga and Fashanu are bigger needs and Meris Mims that would fit the mould of this kind of, you know, top tackle. But Rome Odunze would be extremely enticing, wouldn't he?
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, if Roma Dunze was there, I mean, you know, you look at the grades that he's got with NFL.com, just as an example, like 91 first year starter, you know, projected 91 overall score, you know, NFL comparison from Lance Zierlein is Larry Fitzgerald. Now, let's not get carried away. But if you've got someone like that that's fallen down to 18, consensus is he shouldn't have, perhaps because there's been a run on quarterbacks, you know, and O-linemen, fine. I think if you get value, I'm never that bothered about it. You know, if this guy comes in and he's even anywhere near T. Higgins, for example, it'd be great value for us at 18 to get someone that talented. And all of a sudden next season, you know, you've got Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Roma Dunze. That'd be a hell of an offense to stick out on the field along with Mike Gesicki. So you'd be excited. Yes, you'd be running very thin at O-tackle. The depth there would be questionable.
I mean, the thing is, Nathan, that doesn't stop them from drafting. I mean, our Dockers, in his dream draft, I would say, he took Byron Murphy in the first round, and then went, where did he go? In the second round, he went to Kingsley Soamatea, the big lad out of, what college was he? Out of BYU, the 6'5" tackle there, Kingsley Soamatea, the Polynesian dude. So, you know, just because you don't take an offensive tackle in the first round or a defensive tackle, that doesn't stop you. Obviously, the draft doesn't stop there, obviously. But, you know, it's kind of whether you take advantage of that historical top end of the tackle class. But the thing is about taking a Dunze, another interesting aspect of what Joe said, he doesn't think the wide receiver class is quite as deep as a lot of people are saying. So to get someone truly elite...
Yeah, yeah.
If he falls into your lap at 18, then why not? Tease off next year. We all know that. We haven't got a slot, so we could interchange, you know, Jamar, inside. He's got the physical traits to do that. We've got Gesicki. T could be a very big slot as well. And, I'm all excited now again, because I just haven't really been, do you know what I mean? I haven't even really considered that, because Dunze has always been mocked in the top six, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know completely. Well, I think what we need really is, like, for us to get a really quality player is you need people getting excited, like the Raiders drafted Michael Penix, and, you know, people like going higher than you'd expect them to go, people getting a bit excited and saying, actually, you know, I need Bo Nix in the top 10 because we're desperate for a quarterback and we've got a fear that someone might, you know, sneak up. Maybe, like I've said before, Cooper DeJean going unexpectedly at 7, that, you know, 15, 16, 17, something like that. Someone just falls in love with a prospect. And you get a player like that falling down. Again, it's really unlikely. Like, you know, Joe Alt, you know, I don't think I've seen him mocked outside of the top 10. Very, very unlikely he'd fall down that far. But you are starting to see perhaps some slightly interesting movers around. I mean, I'm on an NFL.com draft now, and you've got, well, this guy's got Byron Murphy going number 8 to the Falcons. And I mean, that's about as high as I've seen him go from Eric Edholm. So there are some slightly...
Well, there's rumours that the Falcons might be docked some draft places because they... tampered with Kirk Cousins, which sounds dirty, but it's NFL parlance, Nathan, for tapping him up.
So, too late now, though, surely.
Well, they can retrospectively take away draft picks, apparently, as punishment. So we'll have to wait and see. Other news as well, Ted Karras and his partner has had a little baby girl, so congratulations to our pal Ted. Fantastic stuff there. I think the thing with 18 is that, as we discussed with Joe there, the Bengals really could go anywhere because there are a lot of good players in this first round by the looks of it, in terms of, you know, grades and all the rest of it. I say you've got like 6 or 7 tackles, you've got a couple of stud defensive tackles, you've got a couple of stud wide receivers in that kind of area, you've got a couple of stud cornerbacks in that area. I mean, even, you know, you're looking at sort of edge rushes as well, if you want to go down that route, you know, Leatu Latu, Jared Verse, those guys. I mean, I don't know, chop Robinson. It all depends what the Bengals' big board likes, because they do stick to it. They do stick to best player available.
Is there anyone out there, like, for me, if they drafted a cornerback, I mean, barring it, if it's Cooper DeJean, I'd be like, oh, yeah. But outside of that, like, they took, like, a Nate Wiggins or someone like that, I'd be a bit like, ugh. Like, is there anyone, I'm not saying he wouldn't be a good player, I'm not saying there isn't a definite need for a bit more depth at cornerback, but is there anyone that if they took with the first pick that you'd be like, oh, God, like a real sort of...
Well, that's tricky. Joe has actually been saying on Twitter, the Bengals are going to have to really do something spectacular to screw this up, because of the large, as I said, go back to this, because of the large proportion of players who have first round grades, it's going to be difficult to not land a good player here, or at least, you know, a good prospect, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think an edge rusher might be a one, but then again, you know, you look at, say, Leiatu Latu, who's, like, you know, really highly rated. He might end up falling to us if there's a run on offensive tackles. And then you get someone like him falling in your lap. I do like Quinion Mitchell. He's one of my boys this year, one of my sort of prospects I'm keeping an eye on. Quinion Mitchell, the cornerback. Safety would be weird, maybe. Don't know. Maybe a guard might be a bit too high. There's certainly in the second round, as Jay mentioned, the interior offensive line is a good class as well. So
if they took Brian Thomas, would you be a bit like, meh? Like, that's the sort of player that, you know, I think he's slightly...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Maybe, yeah. I think maybe, yeah. Goodness me, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there might not be any... I mean, he's a big play guy, you know what I mean? So...
Yeah.
But I'd be less... I'd less enamoured, I think. I would like to see an offensive lineman or one of the defensive tackles, if possible. Or, you know, if a real playmaker happened to drop into our lap. Or a cornerback, basically. So, basically any position as long as they're good, I think. it's a nightmare this year trying to predict. Before we get into our selections and your correspondence, Nathan, shall we play the name game?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready and waiting.
Someone texted me today or messaged me and said the name game is the highlight of their year. Can you believe that? I mean, I would suggest that they don't get out enough, but... Happy to go along with that. So how do you want to do this? You've got some names for me.
Oh, I've got some names, 10 that I've made up, 10 that are real players in this year's 2024 draft.
So there's 20?
Yeah, so I've got 10 real players, 10 made up players.
Okay, all right then, let's do
that.
I'm going
to shout them at you, and you're going to say, and you got to be quite quick with this.
Okay. So what's how many do I have to get to win the prize, whatever the prize is?
Well, I think considering like your knowledge of the draft's quite good, I'm going to say you need to get 15.
All right, so three quarters. Okay, yeah. Let's go.
All right, the first player, are they a real player or made up? AJ Van Conklin.
Made up.
That is correct. They are made up. Next player, Richard Williamson the IV.
Oh, well, that's quite a dull name, isn't it? I'll go real.
No, they are made up.
Okay.
The next one, Brawler Cox.
Pardon?
Brawler Cox.
Brawler Cox. All right, yeah, I'll go with that one.
No, he's made up.
One out of three, come on now.
The next one, Delmar Glaze.
Yeah, he's real. Offensive lineman.
He is from Maryland, good knowledge. The next one, Savage Tucker.
No.
No, he's fake player as well. So you're crawling it back slowly.
Three out of five, yep.
The next one, Al Blades Jr.
Real.
He is. He's a cornerback from Duke.
Ooh.
Great name, that. The next player, Bo Corrales.
Real.
Yes, a wide receiver from Texas State. Very nice indeed. The next one, Jubum Okwonkwo.
Jubum Okwonkwo. There is an Okwonkwo in the league. I'll say yes.
Yes, there is. Jubum Okwonkwo, a linebacker from Pittsburgh State.
Oh, hello.
The next player... Gzuvava.
Fuck off. What? What?
Xuava Gadlin.
Get out of it.
He's a real player. Right, we're getting... You're doing all right. You've only got three wrongs so far. You're still very much in
the mix. Yeah, not bad.
Next player, Trailing McCube.
Can't be.
No, it's fake.
Trailing McCube.
Next player, Jefferson Nugget.
Ooh. I'll say yes.
Now he's made up player.
Ooh, 7 out of 11. Come on now.
Right, your next player, Easton Gibbs.
Not real.
No, he is real. He's a linebacker from Wyoming.
Ooh, 7 of 12. He slipped. Come on.
The next one, John Lee Eldridge III.
Real.
He is real. He's a running back from Air Force. Next player, Khalid Duke.
Khalid Duke. Real.
He is real. He is a edge rusher from Kansas State.
9 out of 14.
The next one, DeHenshaw Goggins.
No.
It's fake. The next player.
15. I need to get 5 out of the next. Oh, bloody hell. Go on.
Marvelous Brotherson.
No.
No, he's not real.
I could have been, though. There is. I did see. Yeah, okay. 11 of 16. Come on now.
Griffin McDowell.
Not real.
No, he's real. He's an offensive tackle.
Oh, I've blown it. I can't get back now.
Gunnar Britton.
Not real.
He is real. He's an offensive tackle from Auburn.
You're joking. Oh, dear.
Two left.
Go on.
Sydney Rush.
Real.
No, he's made up.
Oh.
And the final player in the name game 2024, Fenton Riley.
Fenton, do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
For that reason, I'll go, no, he's not real.
No, he's not real, no.
12 out of 20, I've blown it. So you win, Nathan. I do have some for you. 10. Shall we just rattle through them, okay?
Go on.
Dylan Lube.
Real.
No. There is a Dylan Laub, but not a Dylan Lube.
That's why I said real. I knew there's something like that.
One Direction.
No, it's got to be made up.
True. It is made up. Kavose Smoke.
Yeah, I'm going to go real.
It is real. He is a running back from Colorado.
What a name that is.
Sincere Hainsworth.
I'm going to go, that's real as well.
It is. He's a centre from Tulane. We've mentioned him before. Brock O'Lee.
Oh, yeah, it sounds real.
Brock O'Lee? Broccoli?
I didn't get that shit.
Oh, mate. I could have gone Tim O'Tay or Luke Ozaid. But I went Brock O'Lee for that Irish-themed wordplay. Crystal Metheny.
Unfortunately not.
No, that's true. I've lost all score now. D. Wiggins.
Yeah, I'm going to go with D. Wiggins.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Pig Cage.
Absolutely not.
It's true. He's a defensive back from LSU, but he's not in the draft this year. So, DeColdest Crawford.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
that
yeah.
is true. He's a wide receiver from Louisiana Tech, but he's not in the draft this year either. So watch out for him next year. And finally, Velvet Ringpiece.
Absolutely not.
That is true. You're right. So you have out of 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7 out of 10, Nathan. So well done. You win. You're the winner of the name game 2024.
No, oh, thank you very much, my son. I mean, I'm not being funny. There's so many, like, we've had to go sort of, obviously, for players that we're not aware of. I mean, you're talking about geezers called Lad McConkey with a double D, and then you've got Kool-Aid McKinistry. I mean, there's some absolute crackers in this year's draft.
My favourite. God, what's his name? Sorry.
Not Ennis Rakeshaw.
Yeah, not Rakeshaw. There is a defensive back that I really love. And I think it's like Cuisine Stiggers or something like that. And it's like the most incredible name.
I mean, Jazan Johnny Newton's a cracking name as well.
Yeah, Jazan's great. Romo
Dunze, Cooper DeJean. I mean, there's some absolute crackers. Brock Bowers is a sort of like, you know, an incredible player, incredible name. Like, yeah, I mean,
Brock Bowers sounds like an American soldier of some description.
Yeah.
That he's like, going to batter you.
Yeah, I mean, even like Talisi Fuaga is a cracking name in it.
Yeah, but... and I think the rise of the Polynesian guys, you know, the guy, you know, the guys, some sort of Samoa and all those sort of Malik Mustafa. We've got Nehemiah Pritchett. Some good Decamarian Richardson. That's a good one as well. But anyway, we could talk about this all day. We need to go to the correspondences and then we'll have a little tickle of some of the players that we'd like to see the Bengals draft this year. Right, let's have a quick look. Man Abelhosen at the Fireman.
Solid handle.
Could you see offensive lineman Graham Barton potentially being the pick in round one? I'm going to say no. It's interesting with Barton because Chris Sims had him in that kind of area, a bit below us. But I know a lot of people like Barton. But interestingly, he started off as a tackle, but then this week I've seen him listed as a centre and as a guard as well. So it seems as though he can do it all, really. Now, the Bengals might like the idea of that versatility. I just think there's going to be better players above him waiting for us at 18, you know. So I will say no. But, of course, you can never rule anything out. But I'm going to say no.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I mean, unless the Bengals internally have... you know, falling in love with him for some reason, and the coaches of, you know, because this is the thing, isn't it? Like, it's all well and good for people like us and even Joe Goodberry to sit there and analyse players, but really in the Bengals, you know, the Bengals coaching staff, they're going to be having a look at that and they're going to be saying, oh, I like this for this reason, because he's got up like coaching players that have got longer arms or have, you know, more explosive, or I think I can train them to do this and that. So you never know, with someone, they might say, look, we love this geezer. I mean, look at, you know, it's certainly not a good example. Look what they did with Cordell Volson. You know, that was a massive shock. But obviously someone in the building said, look, you know, we reckon we can get something out of this geezer. Didn't work. But, yeah, you never know.
Adam Kiefaber at Adam Kiefaber. First time caller, I think. Welcome, Adam. I haven't heard anything connecting us to Braylon Allen, which I don't get, as there is buzz around Aldrick Esteem. Allen and Brown could work for us. Curious about your thoughts if the Bengals got Allen at 97 or even at round four. I agree, Adam, actually. I think, what do you think about running back? I think there will be a running back this year. Just judging by Chase Brown's and recent interviews in the locker room, I really think they're gonna give Moss and Chase Brown. That's the two-headed running monster this year. And I think, and that's not to say they won't draft another running back. Now, I've been looking at Esteem in rounds four and five. He seems to be popping up there, but some have been mocking him a bit earlier. But it would make sense, you know. Those two guys, Moss and Chase Brown, are smaller, they're quicker, they're shiftier. Now, do you want someone stylistically to complement them? And that mean, if you do, that might mean a bigger back, someone about 6 foot, someone about 230-odd pounds.
I don't see the need for running back. I really don't. I don't. If they go round five or later, then I'm not too fussed by it. But I just think you've got Zach Moss, and I think you've got Chase Brown, two very good players. I love what I saw from Chase Brown last year. Moss, I actually think, is a really smart pickup for the Bengals. I think he's a bit underrated. You've also got Travion Williams sat there as well, who's not a bad running back for your number three. I think save the picks. There's other areas I think that are more important. I think I'd look at one next year. and potentially think about someone that could be a bit of a more long-term sort of feature back. I'm not sure Chase Brown, perhaps at his size, is ever going to be a guy that's, you know, ripping off 20, 25 carries a game, or even if that's the modern NFL anymore, if you actually need a running back to be doing that sort of duty, especially knowing what the Bengals are like in terms of not, you know, necessarily running the ball particularly much when you've got a geezer like Joe Burrow slinging it about. But I don't think they need to be looking at running backs inside the first three rounds. You've got a bit of a hole at wide receiver for the third receiver who actually will need to start and play some snaps. You've got a bit of a big hole really in some ways at the tackle and the defensive line positions that you're going to need to really address first. So unless there was a crazy player that had fallen down that the Bengals really rated. But again, I just think in terms of win now mode, I'm not sure it'll make much of a difference for us this year.
Interesting. Adam, I would consider Braylon Allen a bit later on. I think Nathan might be right here, but I do think whenever it happens, like you say, I think a bigger back might complement the likes of Zach Moss and Chase Brown. So, Jamie at Trek White Beaster, I want a trade up into the bottom of the first. Get me offensive line and a DT. If not, get me Byron Murphy or Johnny Newton and worry about offensive line later. And get me a punter on day three. Perfectly plausible. I don't think the Bengals will move up into the first round. I don't think. I mean, they might try and package up one of their thirds. Remember, they've got 10 picks this year. I just don't see it. Just because they don't do it. I'm not to say I don't want them to do it. I think they should consider all kinds of things. But they just historically don't do it. They're not real movers and shakers. They might move up a little bit in the third, fourth, fifth round, something like that. We've seen that before. We've seen them move up in the second before. But I'd be surprised if they moved.
I wouldn't be surprised if they moved in some way. I think that they've actually got a little bit more flexible in terms of what they're able to do in the draft. But I think the sexiest option for me would be in the first round, you got Latham and you've got Kraken. That's a really good option at tackle. We're really happy with that. Or even Faltanu or someone like that. But you've got your tackle. Everyone's really happy. And then Johnny Newton has dropped to the top of the second round. And everyone's like, oh, cool. He's one of the best players available. 3, 4, 5 picks go past in the second round. The Bengals say, sod it. That's not a ridiculous way to go up from where we're picking in the second round. Exactly like you said, son, give up one of those third rounders and go and get him. And then all of a sudden, you've got a stud defensive tackle who, you know, I don't think Johnny Newton's going to be there 5, 6 picks into the second round. But if he was, you'd say that's excellent value. And then you've got your tackle as well. And then you can kind of be a bit liberal, because you don't really need 10 picks. You're not going to get anywhere in a million years. You're not going to get all 10 of those.
Well, this leads us on to the next question. It's Tom McDowell at Wagat Dub DD. What is the likelihood that we use all 10 picks? We are already one of the youngest teams, as it were, taking on players that aren't likely to make it. I think Tom's exactly right. I'd be surprised, actually, if we did select 10 picks. It's the perfect opportunity to package a couple of things up. Not necessarily for the first round, but certainly you might see the Bengals moving a little bit up and down the boards from like rounds 2, 3, 4, 5 onwards, you know. Because Tom's right, you know, I've been doing mocks and I was just thinking, bloody hell, there's a lot of players to fit in here, you know, 10.
Yeah.
And also you're almost picking players for the sake of it, you know. But there we go. Aaron at Azaz. Oh, what does that say? Azatamps, SWFC. Azatamps, WFC. I know what WFC stands for. Aaron's a big Watford fan. Azatamps, WFC.
Shocking handle.
Okay. And Aaron says, I can't make my decision on pick 18, but Ben Sinnott, the tight end in stripes, please and thank you. Ben Sinnott is liked a lot by a lot of people. He feels like a really good all-round sort of tight end. He can really catch passes, and he's a decent in-line blocker, moves really well. I wouldn't, who knows, I doubt. I mean, I don't know about tight end, to be honest, but now we've got Gizicki. We might need to round off that room. They've been meeting with a lot of people. Let's just see who they've met. I know this doesn't mean a lot, but
just quickly, Sam, on the subject of tight end, 10-second answer.
Yeah.
Brock Bowers is there at 18. Are you in? I know, obviously, it's hard to say who else is there and et cetera.
Yeah, it just depends who else is there.
Would you take
really.
him?
If no one was around, then yes. But I'm not huge on tight ends, I have to say. Just
so Latham are gone, but you had Faltanu there. Fuaga was there.
Yeah, I'd take Fuaga.
Yeah,
I think so. Although it just depends, really. If they got Bowers on their board higher, then they're going to take him. They're going to take him. They really are. Whether I would or not, I'm not so sure. Because I say I'm not that I don't like tight ends, but I don't know. I'm just not. I can't explain it. I'm not quite as big on.
Mike is going to be fuming in that situation because he's on a 1 year prove it deal. You go and get Brock Bowers in round one, and they start splitting snaps. I know you've not got necessarily a guy in the.
I think Gazik is going to play a major role this year.
I think he's going to be fantastic. I really do.
Yeah, me too. So let's just go through who they have met in terms of visits recently. So Eric Hall, the tight end, he's reckoned to go sort of quite late on, so he's one to watch. I think there's definitely a chance for Eric Hall. Xavier Thomas, a defensive end. McKinley Jackson, a defensive tackle, a big nose tackle, so I think he might be in play sort of rounds three, perhaps, maybe. Tavondre Sweat, a big lad. We've already talked about him. Mason Smith, another defensive tackle. Justin Rogers, defensive tackle. Late round pick, I think. Amarius Mims, Trey Knox, a tight end. Dejan Anthony, a defensive back. Julius Wood, a safety. Fortanu Fuaga and Giovanni Manu, all offensive tackles. Gabriel Murphy, a defensive end. Joshua Cephas, wide receiver. They think he might be quite a good value pickup in the later rounds. Evan Anderson, a nose tackle. Javon Foster, another offensive tackle. Devontae Walker, a good-looking wide receiver. Byron Matos, offensive tackle. Jalen McMillan, wide receiver. Carson Steele, running back. Avery Jones, center. Johnny Newton, defensive tackle. And Brandon Coleman. So you can see, I mean, they might not select any of those guys, but they, you can see the pattern of position groups they've been looking at. So certainly trenches, but the odd wide receiver and the odd defensive back as well, and running back and tight end. So we will see. Paris Pinney, if Byron Murphy and Brock Bowers are gone, how likely are they to consider picking Johnny Newton at 18 or the fifth or sixth choice offensive tackle? Do you think the Bengals will be interested in Troy Franklin at pick 49 and Aldrick Esteem in the mid rounds? That's a really good question by Paris. You know, do you go for Johnny Newton above, say, I don't know, a Tyler Guyton or someone like that? I would say yes.
How much do you think the Bengals are really thinking this year around win now in terms of we want someone that's going to contribute? Because I mean, obviously, if you draft an offensive lineman, there's no doubt that long term, you know, that line is aging. There's guys on short-term deals, contracts expiring. So you need someone, obviously, for next year. But is there any thought that goes into it around who's going to contribute immediately in this season? Because like Johnny Newton, for example, if he came in, he was your number one pick. Same with Byron Murphy. You'd like to think they could contribute immediately in rotation. You know, they get snaps in, they work around, you know, they replace for injuries. Whereas if you did get a Fuaga, Latham, whoever on the offensive line, if that offensive line stays healthy, again, we were quite lucky last year with that. It's not by no means a guarantee, but they're not really going to contribute too much in year one. So it's just in how much do you think that plays into it? Do you think they're bothered around about next season, the year after with these picks, or a bit more like, oh, actually, if we could get a bit more juice for this season, then let's go for it?
Oh, man, it's it depends how you view the draft. And I really do think a lot of fans don't view it the same way as teams do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah.
So us fans want players immediate impact, and you know, teams do as well to some extent. But I've always been told that the draft is for talent, first and foremost. You know, the Bengals like to draft people. This is another consideration when trying to guess who they might go with. You know, if there's a guy, say, take Ted Karras, for instance, his contract's up at the end of the year. So it's likely that they will draft someone this year. He won't be a starter. He'll be learning in the background and, you know, he'll take over from Ted, all being well. They did it with, you know, they've done that before. you know, no one really thought Miles Murphy was like the player that was going to make a huge impact year one. As it turns out, it wasn't. He wasn't, for sure, but that for different reasons. But it's kind of like, why are we drafting him when it's not a need? You know, you don't draft for needs, generally speaking, or at least that's the conventional wisdom. You draft for talent. So you have your board. And if Miles Murphy is there at high on your board where you're picking, you stick to their board. And the Bengals do that, and they draft for the future as well. So it's tricky, isn't it? You want players to hit, you know, to have an impact right away. But the Bengals tend to do that a little bit differently, I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that, Sam.
So it's all right. right. Tip the Bengals at Islands Houday. Who are the teams behind us that could look to move up ahead of us and snag a player that they don't know we'd have an interest in? And that's the other, that's the other element of the draft that's really interesting. All this kind of school diggery and kind of scare tactics and people saying that, hey, we're going to move up and then not, and people being quiet and then they're going to move up. So let's have a look at the
Do you know what it'd be? Just because they know what we need and we know what they need. And
Steelers.
Yeah, of course it is. They're Steelers, 20 and they'll sit there, and if there's a prospect at 16, 17 that they might like, that they know we also might like, they're going to be thinking about coming up and jumping us. They won't have to pay too much either to come up 3-4 spots. Their top needs, offensive line, wide receiver, cornerback and defensive line, same needs as us. So they're the ones that are going to be sat there, thinking, oh, hang on a minute, if we quite like this guy, JC Latham's there at 16, 17. I mean, I would not be surprised at all. Jacksonville Jaguars on the clock, trade comes in, and it is someone like the Steelers coming up to nip in front of us.
I won't be surprised if Buffalo are keen, because they've sort of painted themselves into a bit of a corner with their lack of wide receivers. Although Chris Sims has got Brian Thomas going to Buffalo, which would be, you know, a decent pick. They've got bloody Jazar Newton going to Kansas City. That's not going to be fair if that happens. Right, who else have we got? Neil Gillett at Neil 352. Really good to hear from you, Neil. Number one, can't split between Murphy and Latham. Number two, he wants Samaris Mims. Number three, Jazar and Johnny Newton. And he said, I'd accept Fuaga, but expect him to be long gone by 18. So there we go. Right, Nathan, it's time for our picks now, Nathan. Who you got? Who do you fancy?
Is this for just for us in general? I mean, I've said Cooper DeJean. I'll start with that for round one. I mean, I'm not saying that he would be necessarily the best fit for us, but I love him as a player. In terms of for us, the guy I'd want, realistically, I think J.C. Latham for me. I mean, I think that'd be a really solid, cracking pick for us that's realistic to some extent. Sexy pick. If Roma Dunze dropped down, just because I saw it today, I'd also be very happy with that. But Latham for me would be the ideal realistic solution.
I'll go Latham as well, and also I'll go Fuaga. I'd be happy with Brian Murphy. I'd be happy with Quinion Mitchell as well.
Latham was there last week in our mock draft, so we've both changed our tune in the last week.
I still take perhaps Fuaga over Latham, but you can't ignore the likes of Joe Goodberry, and you can't ignore the likes of Dave Lapham. Do you know what I mean? Who know what they're talking about. And we did say last week, to be fair, that Latham is a very polished, powerful guy, and he'd be perfect for that right tackle slot. And interesting that Joe Goodberry kind of comps him to Willie Anderson. So, you know, that's pretty good. You can't knock that. Anything lower down in the drafts? There's plenty of interesting running backs. I like a few of the cornerbacks later on in the draft. TJ Tampa. Who else?
Keon Coleman, I think, if you get in the second round.
Yeah, I like Keon Coleman. Well,
he seems like a fairly good player. I mean, maybe not, you know, like the world on fire, but he's a big, fast guy, and he's around two, sort of. He's only 20 as well, so you feel like he's got a bit of a ceiling there, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I agree. But yeah, I do like McKinley Jackson as well, and I like Chris Jenkins, some of the big guys on the defensive tackle.
Do you know a guy that stood out to me, a bit of a sleeper, is Dwayne Carter, just on the basis that he's been a three-time captain. And you know what that Zach Taylor loves about drafting guys that have been captains, a high charisma, comes across really well, 114 pressures in three seasons, sort of around you know, 3-4-5 guy. But just on that basis, that's what you always forget. He really does prioritize that in terms of building a sort of locker room culture. So do not be surprised if any of these draft picks, you know, maybe two, maybe even three of them have been captains or someone of note in the locker room.
I'll go over some wide receivers, okay? Ricky Pearsall. Now, he's a bit older. And I know our friend Paris Pinney there doesn't rate him. He just sees him as an older version of Charlie Jones. But if you look at some of his highlights, goodness me, that lad can catch a ball like over his shoulder, contested catches. He would be perfect for the slot. He's quick as well. I really like the look of him. I also like Jalen Polk as well. Super reliable guy. 6'1", 203 pounds. Just a fantastically reliable slot receiver who can play a bit on the outside as well. And I'll also go for Jalen McMillan, another 6'1", 197 pounds. So a little bit slighter than those guys. But again, he's met with the Bengals and... watch out for him. So there's a few wide receivers, few defensive tackles, but certainly in that first round, I think me personally, it's Latham or Fuaga with either Murphy or Newton. How about that?
There we go, my son.
Right, thank you so much for listening. Thank you again to Joe Goodbury for his time. It's a bumper episode, as I mentioned. Thanks for sticking with us. We'll be back next week to, you know, just go through it all, really. It's really exciting. As I said, there's potential that the Bengals might be selecting up to 10 new players. Who's going to be our new hero? Who is going to be the person that we warm to? Who's got a fantastic backstory that we can't wait to find out? It's always a super exciting time. So enjoy the draft. We might even have some video stuff, some instant reaction stuff. Throughout the weekend, so look out for that. So until next week, enjoy the draft, and it is a hoo day from me.
And a hoo day from me. Cheers, guys.
And it should also be noted that the views and opinions expressed within this podcast do not reflect those of the Cincinnati Bengals organization.